oral argument in Antonsen v. Mendez.
Good morning. My name is Beth Krulowich, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellants Tammy and Antonsen. Your Honors, this case really involves two separate and competing interests. One is the interest that every citizen has in being able to bring to a court of law conflict and have that decided on the merits. That's a right that every citizen has. Competing with that interest is a trial court's ability and authority to manage its own docket and to be able to impose sanctions and enforce rules that are designed to enable cases to move through the courtrooms in an efficient manner. Our rules of civil procedure deal with both of these interests by outlining procedures by which a trial court has the authority to dismiss a case that's not being...
Excuse me, if I could interrupt you, Ms. Krulowich. Judge Bernard just pointed out to me, Ms. Carmen, the clock apparently is not running.
There it goes.
Okay. Well, you can please continue with your argument, and we'll give your opposing counsel a minute or so extra if it's necessary.
That's fine.
Thank you.
And anyway, as I was saying, the rules of civil procedure basically accommodate both of these interests by articulating the power of a trial court to dismiss a case for failure to prosecute is an inherent authority. Courts inherently have the right to manage their own dockets and to impose rules and whatnot in order to manage their dockets. The rules of civil procedure really kind of just make it concrete. And Rule 41 does give a trial court explicitly the authority to sua sponte dismiss a case if that case is not being diligently prosecuted, and specifically refers to another rule of civil procedure, Rule 121.1-10, which sets forth the procedural way that a court can sua sponte dismiss a case if a case is languishing and is not being prosecuted by the plaintiff. In this particular case, the trial court didn't follow any of these procedural rules, and those rules require that if a trial court is considering sua sponte dismissing a case for failure to prosecute, that the court provide the parties with written notice of its intent and give the parties 30 days to respond and show, A, if there's a reason or a mitigation for a reason why the case has been languishing, and two, to show proof that the case isn't being ignored and that it is being prosecuted.
And this Krulowich, the Mendezes assert in their answer brief that the argument that you're making now wasn't raised in the district court at all, and therefore we shouldn't address it. And what is your response to that?
Well, the argument was raised in that the trial, it wasn't raised exactly the way I'm raising it. I don't think that means that it can't be raised on appeal. I mean, one of the things that they said in their answer brief is that because we didn't list the issue, I was not the trial counsel. I'm an appellate professional. I was brought in to do the appeal. So I didn't file the notice of appeal. And when the notice of appeal was filed, it asserted that the Rule 60 motion, that the trial court erred in not granting the Rule 60 motion, which was asking the trial court to reconsider its decision. I don't think that is binding on this court in terms of the rules. It seems to me that the cases that have come out of the Court of Appeals, particularly Covey versus Kumar, shows that when a trial court is basically ridding its docket of a case, not on the merits, but just for a failure to prosecute, that there needs to be some sort of, it's really a due process issue, that you need to give notice and the party an opportunity to be heard. The fact that the trial counsel didn't catch the fact that these rules weren't followed, I don't think deprives this court of addressing the issue. I mean, it's my client, Ms. Antonsen. It's her rights that have been basically taken away from her by having this case dismissed when this was a case that was being prosecuted. I mean, if you want to get to the merits of the case in terms of whether or not this was a case that was being diligently prosecuted. It was. So I think that you can still address if you, you know, I think you can decide this case based on the fact that the trial court did not follow the procedures and did not give Ms. Antonsen the 30 days within which to come into court and show, A, that the case was being prosecuted and give some explanation for why the order was not followed, which was setting the trial by a certain date.
Ms. Krulwich, as an appellate professional, you know that normally we do not address issues that were not raised in the district court, regardless of whether this issue was set forth in the notice of appeal. But normally we don't address issues that were not raised in the trial court. Is there some reason why we should make an exception to that rule in this case?
In this case, Judge, what has happened is the trial court is completely gone outside of the authority that the rules give it. The authority to sua sponte dismiss a case for failure to prosecute, this judge did not dismiss the case for failure to prosecute. Judge Crabtree dismissed the case for failure to comply with the order from the delay prevention order, which stated that the case had to be set for trial within 10 days. And there is no authority in Rule 41 to dismiss a case for failure to comply with a court order. That is something that can be done if the parties move, but for a trial court to sua sponte dismiss a case, the only authority provided by Rule 41 is to dismiss a case for failure to prosecute. And the facts of this case clearly show that this was not a case that was not, this case was only on the court's docket for 3.5 months. And the parties were doing discovery. The parties were filing motions. The trial court ruled on one of the motions even after it had dismissed the case. So I think that this is a case where the trial court acted outside of its authority, and I think this court has the ability to deal with that issue. I mean, the issue that was raised in the Rule 60 motion was the propriety of dismissing the case. And I think that is preserved. Now, I have found other grounds aside from which the trial lawyers chose to argue the case, but those are grounds that this court should address. I mean, this plaintiff has been denied her right based on a failure of her trial lawyers to set the case for trial within 10 days, a standard delay prevention order.
Ms. Krulwich, pardon me for interrupting you, if I may, please. But how does the argument you just made square with the notion that in the first instance, trial courts should be given with the opportunity to address the kind of arguments that you're raising? And isn't that what 60B is for? To tell the trial court, you've made a mistake here. There were rules to be followed. You didn't follow them. Now, we're giving you an opportunity to correct that. And in the absence of doing that, if we resolve that, don't we do damage to the notion that the trial court in the first instance should be given that opportunity? And it could have here in the 60B motion.
I hear what you're saying, Judge, but I think in this instance, what we've got is a court that is acting outside of its authority. And the court doesn't have, the law does not give the court authority to dismiss a case on the basis that it dismissed the case on. The only authority that a court has to sua sponte dismiss a case is if there is a failure to prosecute. The rule itself that lays forth the procedural dictates for a case that is not being diligently prosecuted says that if there's no activity in a case for 12 consecutive months, that there's a presumption of a failure to diligently prosecute. This case was being prosecuted, and those issues were the court could have addressed those issues. I mean, what the trial lawyers did was they tried to explain to the court that, and I think it was the Comar case actually that talks about that, you know, it dealt with the standard of excusable neglect and whether there was an excusable neglect because of the problem that I think this court should be aware. I'll go back to the facts that the trial lawyer got the delay prevention order, and per the procedure of that firm, gave the delay prevention order to the paralegal to calendar it in their electronic docketing system. That paralegal had serious problems, and ultimately ended up getting fired basically on exactly the day that this case was supposed to be, they were supposed to have the conference to set it for trial. This was not a case that had been neglected. This was a case where we had an employee of a law firm that had drug problems, that was having serious problems, and that let the case fall through the cracks and didn't alert the lawyer. And I'm not saying that the lawyer isn't ultimately responsible, but there were mitigating circumstances here. And the trial court looked at the excusable neglect standard, and it's either the Kumar case or, if I could just get a moment, I'll find a case that is cited in my brief. Maxwell versus WKA Inc. 728 P. 2nd 321, which recognizes that a failure to comply with the rules in terms of the notice and allowing a plaintiff to show mitigation and that there wasn't really a delay, that justifies relief from the dismissal order, even under Rule 60. But it's not dealing with excusable neglect. It's just basically saying that the failure of the trial court to follow the rules is justification for relief from the dismissal order. I mean, this is what we've got here is a plaintiff that had a legitimate grievance that she brought to court, and the trial court did not allow her to proceed on the merits, even though her lawyer was prosecuting the case. The trial court operated outside of its authority under the rules. And I think that it would be very unfortunate for this court to not address these issues simply because the trial lawyer raised it under Rule 60 and didn't appreciate that there were procedural rules that the trial court should have followed and didn't. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krulwich.
Good morning, Your Honors. Joseph Coomer of Woodruff & Hames, appearing on behalf of Lionel Mendez and Joel Mendez, doing business as Joel Mendez Trucking, registration number 39984. Your Honors, I think you hit the contention of our answer brief is that the court's order denying Rule 60B relief is the only order of the trial court being appealed here. Plaintiff is now trying to bootstrap an untimely appeal of the order dismissal and certain procedural requirements into the present appeal. Plaintiff ignores the actual issue of the appeal and substitute a distorted, exaggerated, and misrepresented version of this appeal.
Counsel, you said that it's the dismissal of the case that they're trying to appeal. Did anybody get notice that the court had actually dismissed the case? Because my understanding of the record is that the parties continued on in discovery and continued to do a number of things.
Your Honor, we did file initial disclosures. There was a minute order that was noticed on LexisNexis by my office following initial disclosures. Once we found that, we've contacted plaintiff's counsel's office in, say, mid-July. You know, we've noticed this case has been dismissed. We can't set it for trial. You know, they wanted to take defendant's depositions. So we probably learned of it probably a month after it was issued.
So maybe the order issues in late May and you find out in July, is my record?
Late June? Yes.
By the time you found out, was it too late to appeal the underlying judgment? Had the 45 days passed?
No, Your Honor. And even if you go from the 45 days, they say they found out on August 4th, 2009. That comes to September 18th, 2009. So that time expired. They had possibly 45 days from the date of discovery of the dismissal order.
Well, if we assume that it's 45 days from the actual entry of the order,
right?
They found out too late to appeal, did they not?
Yeah, if they found out, I believe we contacted them in late June, telling them of the dismissal. In their briefs, they say they discovered it August 4th.
Is there anything in the record to indicate exactly when that notice was received by either counsel?
No, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
I do want to address the Covey Kumar case, a case the plaintiff heavily relies on in support of their argument that the trial court did not meet certain notice requirements. In that case, plaintiff filed the motion for relief under Rule 60B and also filed an appeal of the order of dismissal at the same time. So Mr. Coe did raise that issue in the trial court, unlike plaintiff in this case. And as Your Honor stated, since these issues were not raised in the underlying trial court matter or in any of the notice of appeal documents, that 45 days has been expired. The only issue in this appeal matter is whether there was excusable neglect on plaintiff's counsel's part. And I think the trial court's decision was proper in that the plaintiff's sole excuse for not setting the case for trial was that their paralegal did not put it on their calendar. I think as the trial court properly stated, such an instance of attorney carelessness does not meet the excusable neglect standard. A party's conduct constitutes excusable neglect when the surrounding circumstances would cause a careful and prudent person to neglect the duty. The overwhelming legal authority in Colorado bars Rule 60B relief in instances like this where the failure to act was due to attorney carelessness. The trial court properly found that the plaintiff's counsel failed to properly oversee his staff to ensure that his cases were properly managed. A reasonable, careful attorney would not neglect the duty to adhere to the court's orders and deadlines. In Farmers Insurance Group v. District Court, the Colorado Supreme Court identified certain situations involving unforeseen occurrences such as personal tragedy, illness, family death, destruction of files, and other similar situations that may cause a reasonably prudent person to overlook a required deadline. Such unforeseen occurrences do not exist in the present case.
Mr. Coomer, what about Ms. Krulwich's assertion that the problem here was because of a paralegal with drug problems?
Judge, that issue was not raised till they filed the notice of appeal. So they had filed some affidavits under COE. We filed a motion to strike the motion for remand because they had filed the notice of appeal on the same day. So we really don't have any knowledge of the drug problem.
The Rule 60B motion didn't say anything about a drug problem that the paralegal had?
No, not till after the court had ruled on the initial Rule 60B motion.
Pardon me, Mr. Coomer. Am I pronouncing your name
yes.
correctly? Okay. Would it have been possible for the plaintiff's attorney in the 60B motion to say, court, reconsider your dismissal because you didn't follow the rules, and that the rules are clear and the dismissal order shouldn't have been entered in the first place? Would that have been possible?
Yes, Your Honor. They, in their brief, they state that they discovered the dismissal August 4th, and they filed their motion for relief August 20th. So I think they could have done that. They could have been raised. To continue, reliance on office staff to make appropriate filings does not constitute excusable neglect. The trial court's denial of plaintiff's motion for relief from court order pursuant to CRCP 60B was not an abuse of discretion, as the evidence presented and applied to Colorado case law shows that plaintiff's failure to comply with the court order was not the result of excusable neglect, but rather attorney carelessness. We ask that this court affirm the trial court denial of the plaintiff's Rule 60B motion. That's all I have, Your Honors, if you have any other.
Thank you, Mr. Coomer.
Well, to clarify just the timing of how these things worked, May 28th was the day that the dismissal order was done by way of minute order. For some reason, it wasn't communicated electronically to any of the parties. The parties did do their disclosures. Plaintiff's attorneys actually filed a motion for summary judgment, which the trial court ruled on in July after the trial court had already dismissed the case. The trial court didn't even seem aware that it had dismissed the case and ruled on that motion. My understanding is that plaintiff's counsel did not even learn of the dismissal until August. I think it was approximately August 4th. And at that point, trial counsel did, you know, took the only steps that it thought it had, which was to file that motion under Rule 60. Now,
but the trial counsel didn't assert the timing errors that you're asserting now on appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I, you know, where I'm, you know, my reading of the rule is that Rule 41 does not give the trial court authority to dismiss a case for failure to follow a court order. It gives the sua sponte. I mean, this is a sua sponte dismissal. This is not a motion made by any party. This is a sua sponte dismissal, and the only authority a court has to dismiss a case on its own is if there's a failure to diligently prosecute the case. And that clearly wasn't the case here. And I think this court has the authority to deal with that issue, even if it wasn't raised in the Rule 60 motion. And let me clarify about what was and was not raised in the Rule 60 motion. The lawyer who handled the case at the trial level was not aware of, he had relied on his paralegal, and I think that the reality of law firms these days is that, you know, law firms work as a team. And, you know, and whether, of course, the lawyer is ultimately responsible for what does and does not happen in a case. But law firms and lawyers have to be able to rely on their staff to a certain extent. Now, this was just a docketing thing. This wasn't a case where the lawyer was relying on a paralegal to meet a statute of limitation or to file a motion. This was strictly a matter of giving the paralegal a ministerial task and having it docketed so that the lawyer would be reminded in their electronic calendaring system. This lawyer was an underling in the firm, not one of the partners in the firm. And when, it, unbeknownst to him, the firm was dealing with the fact that this paralegal had some serious drug problems. And the firm consulted with other legal counsel. And because of confidentiality issues, concerns about employment law and confidentiality issues, the trial lawyer in this case was not made aware of the fact that there was a drug issue going on until after they learned of the dismissal and he had to scramble to do this Rule 60 motion. It was only after the trial court actually denied the Rule 60 motion that he then found out about what had been going on behind the scenes with this paralegal, and that's when the motion to reconsider the Rule 60 motion was filed with the accompanying affidavits. Because time was running short, and they wanted to make sure that they didn't lose their right to appeal, the same day they filed the motion to reconsider the Rule 60 denial by the trial court, they filed their notice of appeal, and the trial court then said, I have no jurisdiction to consider the motion to reconsider the denial of the Rule 60 motion. So there definitely were some, this wasn't a seamless litigation of the issue, for sure. But the bottom line is, and I can tell that this court does not seem inclined to go this route, but I would encourage you to go back and look at Rule 41. I mean, a trial court only has certain authority. And there is no authority under these rules to dismiss a case sua sponte. And especially in these circumstances when the case was not languishing. It was 3.5 months on the docket. So I would ask this court to please consider that and also the circumstances that gave rise to the missing of the deadline. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krulwich. Thank you again, Mr. Coomer. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course.